Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. You know, I've long wanted to get this guy on the radio. And thank you, Victoria Stilwell, for introducing us to make this happen. I've tried to contact Zach George before, but he gets so many, and I do mean so many responses from thousands of people. You know, if you ever look at a dog training video, here's what happens. YouTube knows you've done that, or Instagram somehow knows you've done that. And then you see another dog training video and another. They pop up in your feed, right? That's what happens. However, this guy pops up in my feed, I think, every minute. I got him on my toaster oven last week. That's how he's everywhere. Zach George, what a pleasure it is to finally get to talk to you.
Same to you, Steve. Very, very good to be here.
Well,
very good to be here.
Thank you very much. First of all, we'll talk about dog training. We'll talk about your passion against, really, some of the dog training methods that are being increasingly, unfortunately, used today. Definitely, we will talk about all that. We'll talk about science and how that should matter, but not necessarily is making a difference all the time. But I want to hear a little bit about you. How did you decide, okay, I am going to go for this thing called social media, and I'm going to build an audience, and boy, have you done that. What drove you in that direction?
Well, you know, I've always been very passionate about the scientific method and helping people understand their dogs. And the last step of the scientific method is to share your results. And so that's always been my motivation to do YouTube, to do social, to just share what I know in that it might help others. Because, you know, dog training is one of those professions. It's unregulated, so there's a lot of misinformation out there, and it's an opportunity to help people understand the topic better.
Well, you mentioned something that I wanted to talk about, and I will right now, the unregulated part. Do you think it should be regulated? And if so, how would that be done? I know you were a part of a group that tried to bring everybody together from all perspectives and all points of view, and that thing kind of fell apart of sorts. I did that years ago, by the way. And
right.
At that time, we did okay with it, but it's a different world today. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, in terms of regulation and what that looks like, well, that would likely need to be done at the state level in each state. And obviously, there would need to be demand for such regulation. Basically, all we're trying to do is to make sure that the general public understands that the odds of them getting a qualified professional dog trainer when they seek to hire one are very low. There's this expectation by the public that when they're paying for a service, that they're going to get something in return that is, you know, not going to be harmful to them or their dog. And right now, the public is generally broadly aware of that fact because anybody can call themselves a dog trainer. And this has been the case my entire career. So we're looking for some basic common sense legislation that would require dog trainers to have a basic baseline of information and ethics before they start engaging the public. So that's an overview, I'd say.
Yeah. So if someone's looking for a dog trainer, what should they look for? And are there letters after the name of that dog trainer that they should look for? Or does that really matter?
Well, I mean, it can matter. It's probably a better indicator than not, but there's not a lot of cohesion around certifications right now. There's a lot of different types of certifications out there. I do think that, unfortunately, we live in a market that's very buyer beware when it comes to dog training. The responsibility falls on the consumer to make sure they're getting a qualified trainer. There's very little recourse, to my knowledge, as of now, something we're trying to change. But, you know, asking basic questions like, you know, how do you feel about training tools like shock collars? How do you feel about prong collars? And when I talk about this, I want to be very clear. I know there are a lot of people listening who may use these devices. I do criticize these devices, but I don't criticize everyday people who are using them because they're not expected to have the behavior science knowledge on why these tools are harmful. But I do reserve special judgment for any professional promoting pain as a communication tool in this industry, which is quite common. In fact, maybe more common than not.
All right. So you've got a whole lot of dog trainers that are in social media that show, okay, this dog, the dog is growling even at the trainer. And then the trainer says, okay, here's what you do. You slap on the shock collar or e-collar, and then you do this and you do this, and look at this dog. This is the most wonderful dog now. And one issue that's actually going on at animal shelters, particularly quote-unquote no-kill animal shelters, is that they need to meet numbers to satisfy the public and to satisfy their board. The more dogs they adopt out, the better. And some of them actually feel, and there's a national group that supports this notion, that no dog ought to be euthanized. And in theory, of course, I'm sure you do and I do support that notion. But the reality is a little bit different. So what they do is they hire a trainer. That trainer is given X amount of time, which is always limited. They're given money to do it, as they should be, you know. They're doing a job. They ought to be paid. But the way they do the job is they use a shock collar, which inhibits the behavior for a time. That dog is adopted out into a family. That family may have children. The dog ultimately bites. And who's the winner and loser there? And this is something I think, or at least I see, is happening all over the country. I'm curious as to whether you are seeing the same thing, and if so, how you feel about it.
That's a great question. This is often a false dichotomy that is brought up that, okay, these are dogs who are facing euthanasia. Therefore, we really need to use these violent methods towards them, or these aggressive methods and tools that are engineered to be painful or unpleasant to dogs. And you bring up a great point. A lot of people don't understand this, but that's something that we're trying to help, is that one of the main side effects to using things like shock collars, prong collars, and choke chains on dogs is increased aggression, fear and anxiety, and mistrust between a person and their dog. So these are not, they create the illusion of a patch, but they, here's, if you're having a hard time understanding this to the public, understand that pain and fear literally never address underlying causes. Any competent professional in our field today should know how to address these issues without using pain, fear, and intimidation if they're accepting money from the public. You know, that's why I make videos about it. I know there's so many great content creators out there and people promoting modern training like yourself.
Yeah. So have you noticed the same thing occurring that I just suggested that animal shelters even are doing in an effort to demonstrate to their board and to the general public that we're turning these dogs around, we're not euthanizing these dogs? And again, to be clear, no one wants to see dogs euthanized. However, there's a difference. They're getting quick results, but is result really the right word here?
No, yeah, suppression would be the right word. It's very easy for the non-behavior expert or non-dog trainer out there to confuse suppression with training and behavior modification. They're very different things. I mean, no one denies that suppression can get a dog under control. In fact, in emergency situations, even trainers like you and me would use suppression or even aversive methods to get a dog under control. But the difference is we don't intentionally bake that in to our training philosophy. We don't bake in these quick, unpleasant leash jerks at a dog's neck as part of our training. Now, if our dog is running in the road or they're, you know, we're breaking up a dog fight or something like that, we do what we have to manage. And I think there's a lot of disconnect and misunderstanding there. But we don't want to set up emergency situations only to have to break them up aversively, if that makes sense. And regarding the animal shelters, you know, I certainly respect that a lot of, you know, I respect the work, I know you do too, of rescue workers everywhere. They do some of the most selfless work out there, and sure, we're lucky to have them. But yes, there are so many well-meaning people have been misled about the appropriate ways to teach these dogs. And yes, using harsh corrections on these dogs, the evidence shows us, will make issues worse, short, medium, and long term.
Yet people are doing it. People are believing these content creators online that are saying, okay, this is the miracle that has happened. I want to know if that's frustrating to you. At some point, you're beating your head against the wall. We'll get back and hear the answer to that question with today's most popular dog trainer, I would suggest. Zach George is here on WGN. Zach George is a dog trainer who specifically, definitely, isn't afraid to say what's on his mind. The result of that has been what? I mean, do you ever feel like, because one of my problems over the decades that I've been doing this is I tend to say what's on my mind, as you can tell by hearing even the nature of the questions I've been asking. Even though you and I agree, not everyone agrees. And I hear from people, I mean, there was a point in time when I was fighting breed bans, Zach, where I had death threats, actually. So, and my wife's been verbally attacked, who has nothing to do with any of this. There's people have seen her on the street and have done that. So the internet makes that even more possible today than ever before. Does taking that stand, which you do in a very public way, has that been something that has been difficult for you to do?
It's not difficult in the slightest for me, no. I mean, we do definitely receive a lot of criticism from those who either don't understand the issue or support treating dogs in this way, by the way, which are multifaceted. There are many reasons that people treat dogs in this way. But yeah, does it bother me? No, no, because the science is unequivocal on this. In order for my critics and those who are criticizing us to be correct about this matter, that means the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, the American Veterinary Medical Association, and literally 100% of their counterparts need to be wrong about this perspective. I think that gets lost a lot. A lot of times people think that, oh, this is Zach George who is giving his opinion on something. No, I'm just stating what the scientific evidence and consensus are on the issue. I don't have to be a good dog trainer even to be correct about the scientific consensus. And that's what I try to help people understand.
You are a dog trainer where? Tell me your story.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, so I started off like, you know, nearly 20 years ago training dogs. I entered the dog training field through competitive sports. Dog frisbee was my sport of choice.
And oh, really?
Yeah. I did freestyle dog frisbee. I'm five-time champion in that sport with my dog Venus, who's no longer with us. Over the years, that evolved. You know, I performed. I've had a couple of TV shows and stuff. I've written a couple of books. And these days, I'm just really focused on getting any information I can out there about how to help people improve their relationship with their dogs. I mean, that's why I do what I do. I really enjoy it. And it's a real gift to be in this position, to be able to do what I do, I feel like.
Well, you could have been, I think, from watching your videos, a park ranger, perhaps. Or maybe you could have worked at a zoo, or maybe done something completely different. You could have been an electrician, I don't know. But instead, yeah, you chose dog trainer. Why did you choose that?
Well, you know, I like many people, just have a natural love of dogs. Actually, I was in the real estate business before I became a dog trainer 20 years ago, because I come from a real estate family, and that's what I did. And it didn't speak to me in the way that working with animals did. You know, very much my dream was if I could be able to work with animals for a living or something close to that, then I never feel like I would actually have to work. And that is what it feels like, you know. I mean, it's cliche to say, but obviously when you enjoy something, it doesn't feel like work.
You know, when I first trained our first dog, who we got, she'd be called a rescue today, at about 9 months of age. First dog is an adult, or 10 months of age, somewhere in there. We put a choke collar on her. I, to this day, feel badly about it on one hand, but on the other, I guess I can say I didn't know what I didn't know, but I still feel badly about it. Do a lot of people, do you think, just not know? And I'm not done with the question. The other part of that question is people sometimes have a dog with an issue, and oftentimes it's aggression or reactivity, and they're just so desperate. I've tried this, it didn't work. I've tried this, it didn't work, they feel. And they're just so, they want to keep the dog. They want to do what's right, and they've been sold a bill of goods, like a good real estate guy can do. You know, don't worry, this house, that bathroom's going to work. Don't worry about it. We can get that plumbing fixed, whatever. And they buy into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. And that is worth mentioning, too. It's very critical that people understand when we're criticizing these methods, we're not criticizing the public. We're criticizing professionals who ought to know better on this, because there is so much information to support the hypothesis that pain and fear should not be used in professional dog training. But you are correct. There are people who are in desperate situations with dogs suffering from aggression and things like that. And, you know, a lot of the problem is when you see, when you see content either online or TV where a trainer is just swinging a dog around or jerking them at their neck, of course, that's going to suppress the behavior. And, you know, that again, that's what people tend to confuse for results. We want to address the underlying cause when we're working with dogs, which is very often fear. Or, you know, feeling uncomfortable or having unease. And those are the things. Or having too much energy that doesn't have a healthy outlet. There are a variety of reasons, and it depends on the dog as to the approach we take. But that approach should always be rooted in ethical science that really considers the dog and addressing underlying causes with those dogs. And that's what professionals should be getting paid to do. And the public deserves that.
And sometimes the underlying cause is even medical, in truth. So
thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, all right, you've got this dog presented to you that is, quote, aggressive. I don't even know why I put that in air quotes, but I really shouldn't. I mean, the dog really wants to eat other people and or other dogs. Is that dog always fixable?
Well, I would actually say that aggressive is not a personality trait. I think it's a behavior. I don't think any dog is, factually, no dog is aggressive 24 hours a day. There are certain triggers. Dogs sleep. Now, there are serious issues with some dogs out there, obviously, and that's where we bring in the help of a veterinary behaviorist or a certified applied animal behaviorist or something like that to help us out if we're dealing with a really extreme situation. And so those are things to consider. And yet, I mean, look, there are dogs who are genuinely going to be mentally sick, unhappy, and where it's the most merciful thing for them to, consider a humane euthanasia for them. But medication can go very far with many dogs as
And I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about your clear ability and also willingness to work with other professionals, which I think is really important. We'll do that and much more when we come back with Zach George on WGN. Next week, it is Dr. Mark Goldstein. Well, this has become an annual tradition. He's been on several years in a row now talking about what his crystal ball says, about what veterinary medicine will be like and what his hopes are for 2025. He is a world-renowned veterinarian who's done it all. We'll also talk with a guy by the name of Larry Holm. He does a podcast about grief, and it's well listened to, very, very excellent podcast. And he had me on talking about pet loss. So I thought, okay, it's fair. I'm going to have you on my show, on my radio show, as well as everything we do is podcasted at WGNradio.com, including the Petcast. So under podcast at WGNradio.com, you can listen to the most recent Petcast. The one up now, the most recent, is about overweight and obese pets, and we need to think differently about that. Check that out. Zach George is a dog trainer. If you're on the internet ever, you can't help but see this guy. You're everywhere. How do people, for three people maybe who don't know how to find you, Zach, how do they find you?
YouTube is a good place. Instagram, just Google Zach George or Instagram Zach George. Z-A-K is how you spell my name, but, you know, the algorithm should figure it out.
Yeah. Z-A-K and then the typical spelling of George. Yeah. So we're talking about dogs who, you say, and I would agree, that there are a percent of dogs, which is a very small percent, that you just can't, nobody can help. And rather than have a public safety concern. But the other thing you said that I think was magical is these dogs that are, and I know aggression is not a personality type, I agree with you, but these dogs that are so fearful all the time, they're not happy. This is a very unhappy life. And for that very small percent that, and particularly in an animal shelter, which makes matters worse, even the best shelters are not the best places for dogs. Maybe the answer for that individual dog these are my words at the moment, might be to euthanize that dog. But having said that, today we have pharmaceuticals that can be so helpful, and the public thinks, well, it's going to change the personality of my dog. Well, to an extent, you want that in a way, right? You don't want that dog to be aggressive or fearful anymore, but they do work, these drugs, and they do what they are supposed to do. And I don't know what the percent, Zach, of people in America on psychopharmaceuticals might be, but it's significant, I believe. So if they can help us, they can, I think they can help our dogs. We also have expertise with behavior modification. People like you, but also you mentioned veterinary behaviorist. You mentioned certified applied animal behaviorist. You didn't mention animal behavior consultants, but I want to throw them in as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you've got all of these folks that didn't exist some number of years ago that can help and do it the right way today. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely with that. And you touch on an important issue. Even within humans, medication is heavily stigmatized in society. And that's something that we need to clear up as professionals in the dog world as well. I mean, medication can be very good for a lot of dogs combined with training, just like with people, or combined with behavior modification and cognitive therapy and things like that. Giving dogs new associations with things that currently or have previously caused them angst, you know, are a really good way. Often what we're trying to do is help them develop favorable associations with things, and medication can help with that as well as training and behavior modification from a true professional.
Mm-hmm. And also, is it a red flag for a dog trainer that you go to say, I want to do this by myself. I am not going to use a pharmaceutical. I am not going to want to associate or work with your veterinarian. I don't think that we need ever a veterinary behaviorist or another expert to come in behavior, because I must know behavior. I've been training dogs for 25 years, but has no necessary expertise or advanced education to demonstrate that, if you understand the nature of my question.
Yeah, it would be a red flag. Those who don't want to seek guidance from others, if they're having that attitude with a customer, they've likely had that attitude for a long time. I don't know what it is about this occupation, but it is so driven by ego. We have the alpha bro types out there all the time who think it's a flex to be throwing a shock collar or a prong collar on a dog and jerking them around. And we can talk about why that is, you know, today or another time. But
no, actually, I'm stopping you because I do want to talk about that. I think that's important. So you had a dog trainer on television for a while, and I think he's still on. I don't know, when Cesar Millan is on or not. But he used to talk about, and he was very popular at some point in time, about you have to be alpha. You have to be in charge over your dog. I will tell you one anecdote. I've told this before on the radio. He was on this very radio show, actually, where I was talking to him, and he asked me, when I was questioning his science behind this, he said, well, who's alpha in your household? And I very immediately said, and it's true, my wife. He didn't like that answer. And then he said, well, you're just kidding. So seriously, I said, well, I'm not kidding. He said, then who's second? I said, well, our cat. Well, he didn't like that answer at all. And then I said, well, it's there's no, we had the discussion about that. Do you have to be alpha, whatever the hell that means, over your dog?
Yeah, the answer is no. This is a long-held myth that the public it's still very common in the public for people to actually believe this. And this is why we highlight the reasons for change in this industry and why they are much needed. Most people are under the impression that this pseudoscience is actually legitimate. And, the methods that Millan has promoted over the years have been extensively debunked. That is a fact that he has been extensively debunked and reprimanded by animal welfare behavior organizations around the world. And, I don't fault anyone for, doing something once that they should do different now, but it's the doubling down and insistence that no, I'm going to believe fake news. I'm going to believe fake science. And I'm going to continue to promote that to millions of people. And that we find to be inexcusable in this industry.
Well, what I find, and people have told me this time and time again, and I'm sure you too, that, oh, I'm the guy who pays the mortgage. I'm the guy who buys the dog food. So my dog should automatically listen to me because I am the boss. And to demonstrate that, I'm not going to allow my dog to go out the door before I do. Or I'm not going to allow my dog to jump on the couch, because that means my dog is demonstrating, if my dog sleeps in bed with me, that my dog is in charge. Mm-hmm. You've heard the same thing, I'm certain. How do you respond?
Well, there's a lot of reasons that people have this attitude towards dog training. You know, some of it is not having an understanding of the science or not having the scientific literacy to understand that these are not rooted in actual facts. Toxic masculinity is a huge issue in our field.
Okay. And can someone, I'm stopping you again, and I apologize for that, and I'll let you continue. Can someone be as effective as a dog trainer who happens to be of the female persuasion, who happens to be 5'3", can that person be, and weigh, I don't know, 98 pounds or something, can that person be as effective?
Yeah, probably more effective. In fact, it's worth mentioning that in the modern dog training and behavior world, this industry has been revolutionized by women identifying people in huge part. And, you know, there is a certain element of dog trainers who are threatened by this, I feel, which I can't get my head around. Anyone who's bettering the industry deserves props and recognition. But yes, the most legitimate dog trainers tend to be female identifying, or, you know, that's quite common. In fact, I'm here in British Columbia right now, where I just hung out with a horse trainer named Shelby Dennis. She does positive training with horses, and the way she communicates with these amazing giant animals without having to lay a finger on them is impressive. And these are very strong animals, as you know.
Yeah, that's the point. I have an elephant story to tell, Zach George. We'll do that when we come back on WGN. So you've been listening to Zach George on WGN, who arguably today is the most influential dog trainer there is. You certainly reach a lot of people. Check out YouTube, check out Instagram. You're on TikTok too, or not? I thought so.
TikTok and Facebook.
Of course, you're everywhere. As I said earlier, I got you on my microwave last week, you know? I mean, you're everywhere. Was that your intent, by the way? And you could tell by listening how articulate this guy is. And also, you speak your mind, but was your intent to be sort of a social media star?
My intent was simply to be of value to enough people to where, you know, I could make a living and also do what I think is bettering the world in some small way, to try and contribute to the human race a little bit. You know, I think we all do that in our own way, whatever we do. But I also think there's a need for accessible free education in dog training. You know, my model happens to be advertiser supported, so I've never charged for dog training content on the internet. And so that was also a motivation of mine. Like, how can I make this free? You know, I mean, make it where anyone with an internet connection can get a basic idea how to train their dog, potty train them anything, really. And so that was my motivation.
Well, this is free, listening to the radio, but that's about what I'm worth as well. So I wanted to ask you about, or tell you this. I once had the opportunity, and you probably have had the same sort of things, to ask an elephant to do something, and note how I put it. You don't tell an elephant to do something. You ask an elephant. Karen Pryor, world-renowned dog trainer in her day, she developed clicker training, and she told me the story that simply she was a dolphin trainer. And she said, I didn't know how to put a leash and collar around a dolphin. And I had to find another way to communicate without actually touching the animal. And she used whistles, which are still used today for those who train dolphins. And out of that developed clicker training, this little box that makes a novel sort of clicker, click sound. So all of these things have nothing to do with touching an animal at all. And yet, Zach can be very effective.
Yeah, and everyday people can be effective as well. See, it's for people who have a difficult time understanding how this is possible, it really comes down to, rather than trying to make an animal do something, the idea is to make the animal want to do the thing that you're trying to get them to do. And that's all positive reinforcement training is. And of course, sometimes when people hear positive reinforcement training, they're like, well, you know, what do you do when your dog is actively lunging or pulling or doing something that is totally unacceptable? And the answer in those cases is to responsibly manage them as, you know, responsibly as you can. If your dog is barking and lunging at a dog while you're taking a walk, you know, crossing the street, walking around the other way and creating that distance to de-escalate the situation is where you're going to find your efforts best spent during management situations while you then address those issues over the coming days, weeks, and months.
Or I would say offer an incompatible behavior that is that is more acceptable. So can you explain what I just said in English?
Yeah, I mean, finding an incompatible behavior. So if you, you know, have your dog, assuming your dog is not over threshold, of course, you know, having your dog look at you, having your dog go into a heel, switch sides, doing something that is incompatible with the barking and lunging is ideal. Again, provided the dog isn't completely over their threshold in those moments. But yeah, absolutely.
Is it also about the relationship that the person has with their dog? I mean, can it be really like Lassie and Timmy, even with adults, for those who even, do you remember who Timmy and Lassie were, Zach?
Yeah, actually, Timmy and I would watch the reruns as a kid. And yeah, I mean, Lassie was very inspirational to me as a child.
Really?
And I don't know that I'd be a dog trainer without that show, quite honestly. Yeah, yeah, it's funny you should mention that.
Is it because you once fell into a well? Why is that?
Well, I was captivated by this relationship between Timmy and Lassie, how they could talk to each other. And I always wondered, you know, can dogs and people really talk to each other in such a way? And obviously, we're talking about a fictional TV series. But it turns out, actually, these dogs can absolutely understand you, even more probably than the show led us to believe. It's quite fascinating. But yeah. Did I answer your question? I forgot what you asked.
That's okay. A recent study actually demonstrated that I just talked about this, that they looked at 18 dogs or some such thing, and they had dogs that could tell they wouldn't eat the treat if the person delivering the treat, who they never met before, was stressed in some way. They could tell, as opposed to the control group where they scarfed up down the treats, or the people that they never met before who were not under stress. The dogs actually could tell the difference without seeing a person, without ever, this was not their owner or a family member. These are people the dog never met. It's fascinating to me, but yet in a sense, not surprising.
Yeah, interesting. I'm not aware of that study. So I'll have to look into that. But yeah, that, I mean, it's interesting. Dogs are a good read of character very often, or state of mind. And who knows how they're using that amazing nose of theirs to smell different chemistry in each human? Who knows? But maybe the study goes into that. But that's interesting.
All right. So you meet somebody. I know you're in a, because the internet tells me these things, that you have a partner at the moment. But let's say your dog didn't like that partner. Do you trust your dog?
Well, you know, it's case by case, I suppose. I've never had that issue. but, you know, I think in all seriousness, there are certainly, you know, for example, dogs who might be afraid of men or whatever, just by default.
Sure.
Maybe they've had a bad experience. Maybe men are more intimidating, have a deeper voice, taller, whatever the reason might be. And a lot of times you can build trust with those significant others that they might initially be skeptical of.
All right. This is Zach George. Check him out if you haven't run across him. Again, Zach, where can people find you?
YouTube and Instagram is a great place to keep up with us. YouTube.com/ZachGeorge or Instagram.com/ZachGeorge. That's Z-A-K.
All right. I was exactly going to answer that or ask that question. You've answered it. A pleasure to finally get the opportunity to speak to you. In one sentence, if you could tell everybody anything about relationships with dogs, what would that be?
Focus on building a bond with your dog. Focus on the relationship, getting to know that individual dog. If you take care of the bond, the training takes care of itself.
So that sounds like it's too good to be true.
I mean, you know, I think obviously there, I may be oversimplifying a little bit, but the stronger your relationship is with your dog, the easier it is to build communication. Too often we put the training ahead of the relationship, and both are important. But if we put the relationship first, my view is that you'll set both you and your dog up for success.
And in one phrase or sentence, how do you develop that relationship better?
Well, it's different, but I like to promote play a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a quote I'm really fond of. I put it in my book. It's a Plato quote. You can learn more about a person in an hour of play than a year of conversation. And I've always thought that really applies to dogs. You really get to know a dog if you can get them playing with you. Of course, not every dog is into playing, but a lot of them are.
Yeah, and that's how to build trust as well, which is part of what you're talking about. Zach George, what a great pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
The honor is mine. I appreciate the invite.
This is a fascinating study. You know, I think we're smarter than dogs, but they possess superpowers that we don't. So they can tell all sorts of things about us that we don't have the ability to tell about them. So we can look at a dog and tell, okay, maybe we can tell sometimes if that dog's, not always, if that dog is stressed or anxious, is suffering from fear, anxiety, or stress, but they always can tell that about us. And not only can they tell that about us by looking at us, but by smelling us too. So this one study was done where they took dog food and a person who was stressed touched that dog food. The dog never even met that person before, had no previous experience, doesn't know who these people are. And the dog could tell that that person was anxious and didn't even want to scarf down that dog food. Where if a person isn't stressed and delivered the dog food, the dogs were more than happy to eat it. Talk to you next week, bright and early on WGN.